Well may we say God save the Queen, because nothing will save the Governor General.
You know I've searched my heart to prove there's better ways to push and pull. Hey, whatever gets you through these days.
Hello, and welcome to Well May We Say, a progressive podcast about Australian politics. This is episode 60 for Thursday, 16th of August, 2018. I'm Jeremy Sear, and each week I'll be joined by a different guest host, or sometimes the same guest host, repeatedly.
Sometimes a returning guest host, because that returning guest host is excellent.
That's true. To discuss with me what's been happening to our country, what's going to happen, and what we can do about it. And tonight's guest host, as you may have guessed from the voice, is my wife, Denise Pierco.
Hello.
This is, I think, our first recording since the wedding.
No.
This is our second recording since the wedding.
It is.
That's right. I've already said that. It's our first recording since we got back from Canada.
And what a trip it was.
Land of basements.
Yes.
We should definitely have basements. Land of stupid adding on tax after the actual price in the supermarket.
That part's frustrating. And the more I go back, the more frustrated I get at that. Also, land of tipping.
Yeah, that's pretty dumb.
Rather than just paying people fair wages.
Yeah.
I mean, you know.
Land of standing up for human rights and pissing off Saudi Arabia.
Oh, well, that's a good one. Wait, we stand up for... No.
When the story was there of the rest of the world not standing up with us, Canada, I'm like... Yeah, I'm willing to bet that Australia is just looking the other way. That does not sound like the sort of thing that
we're...
Human rights over money?
I think my shoe. There's something on my shoe.
Anyway, we're back, and it's a land of... Look, Australia, what have you been doing while we've been away? Look,
you've been very naughty. Very, very naughty.
We come back, and obviously... look, we saw from afar the hideous stuff happening with Blair Cottrell and Andrew Bolt's efforts and Mark Knight, and we've come back now with Fraser Anning declaring that we need a final solution to deal with immigration. Now, there is no way you can use that. Okay, there are two possibilities. Fraser Anning is unfamiliar with what the final solution was, which means...
He's an idiot.
It means the 19 people who voted for him should really, really think hard about what they've done.
Yes.
Or alternatively, and the obvious one is he does know perfectly well what it is, but he doesn't care because he's a white man and he can cause offence if he feels like it.
And in fact, he probably used it purposely, because now he's sitting there today saying, oh, you all misunderstood me. That's not how I meant. This is just a way to bludgeon the man and not deal with the issue at hand.
And also, he's competing in the marketplace of idiotic racist ideas for idiotic racist voters who don't necessarily pay a lot of attention to politics generally. And you probably have to go that one step too far to get the wall-to-wall coverage that he's getting, which will slowly eke through to those people that, hey, you know, Pauline Hanson is not where it is at anymore.
She's not as racist as you can get. We have someone who's more racist than that.
Yeah. In fact, Pauline's come out to condemn him for his version, which is identical to hers, really, in substance. It's just that he used a reference that's offensive to some white people.
Yes. What the one thing that did find
interesting... Well, sorry, to all white people, but in a way that a lot of other horrific references would not be offensive to white people.
Yes. He then defended himself and said that, well, this is obviously a straw man getting upset about the final solution thing, because nobody approved of his idea to move the Australian embassy to Jerusalem or support Israel with a Palestine solution.
Yes, this is the old thing of when Jewish people point out that the behaviour of the current Israeli state in apartheid and so forth is in some ways quite similar to some of the things that were done to them. And the same people turn around and go, but no, you can't draw the analogy because we were on the other side of that one. So therefore it doesn't matter when we do it because we're the same people. What? Anyway... I mean, obviously, the Israeli state has not... Well,
I think that's not Australian politics so much, and perhaps is an issue for its own podcast.
Well, we were just talking about how... There is a significant part of Australian politics that ends up fighting about Palestine and Israel.
Yeah.
Again, Australia could occasionally stand up for human rights, even if it's not directly domestic politics.
That's going off on a tangent even earlier than we normally go off on a tangent.
There are some more disturbing things about the second part of that where he's saying, so the quote was, he said, the final solution to the immigration problem, which is a terrifying start to a sentence, that's what we're all talking about. But the end of that is also worrying, of course, is a popular vote.
Yeah. Absolutely.
As the LGBTI community pointed out, when if you take a group of vulnerable people and you have a public vote onto whether or not they should be treated as human beings.
Feels like a witch hunt and discrimination and damaging and all sorts of things. And it enables hate speech. And it feels like the vote we had last year.
Yeah. There is no neutral and friendly way to have a debate about whether somebody should have equal rights, should be treated as a fellow citizen, should be treated, you know, as an equal human being. The whole premise of that debate is that it's a legitimate position to say that somebody isn't an equal human being.
That's pretty scary. Though Bob Catter, the man who sees sense, has come out and says he backs this 100%.
Bob Catter's a crank. But that's the problem. Like the Queensland electorate has a hardcore, also so does Australia, but particularly Queensland, has a hardcore sort of racist undertone, and they're going to be fighting. It'll end up being a fight between Fraser Anning for the last Senate seat in Queensland and Larissa Waters, because basically you've got a sort of mess of right-wing parties that'll all sort of be preferencing each other.
And so now that we've taken apparently One Nation out of that preferencing thing, because apparently they're not going to preference Anning.
But they will. They'll still preference him above, you know, the Greens.
Above Labor and the Greens.
Yeah. So it'll be interesting to see what happens there. But he also did the bit where you throw out a bunch of bullshit figures that you've seen on Facebook. Because in that echo chamber, they just get repeated and repeated as if they're fact. So he made a bunch of claims. One of them is that 56% of Muslim people of working age don't work. Now, that's not true. The fact check that had been done on that claim by ABC back in July when he first started tweeting it is that the actual fact is that 43% of working age Muslims are not in the labour force, which is obviously substantially less than 56%. But it's still a reasonably high Muslim non-participation rate, because the national working age non-participation rate is about 24%. But it's almost entirely due to the number of Muslim women who are not working, because there's a significant conservative component to that religion. But Fraser Anning isn't calling for Buddhists not to be allowed in Australia, who have an even higher workforce non-participation rate. He's not calling for conservative Christians who don't like their wives working to be refused to enter into the country because they have a high non-workforce participation rate. Like, any group that doesn't want have women working predominantly in the workforce will have a higher workforce non-participation rate. So all that he's established there is that Muslims are quite conservative, which is probably true, but I don't think he's suggesting that we take that more generally to discriminate against groups of people who are also conservative. And his other claims are also similarly dubious. I haven't got the numbers on his claim that Muslim people are higher users of, quote, welfare than other groups. And he only compares them with other immigrant groups, so that, like, you're comparing small groups.
He's not comparing white Australians with them.
And what he's... Yeah, well, that's right. He specifically leaves out white Australians who are clearly the highest users of Social Security.
And I also note that he refers to the immigration heyday, basically, of, like, the 50s and 60s. And going back to that, you mean the 50s and 60s when everyone was having a heart attack and a freak out because of all the Italian and Greek immigrants that were coming over?
And look, it is possible, and I haven't done the numbers, but it wouldn't surprise me if more recent immigrants have higher workforce non-participation rates than immigrants who have now been in the country for 20, 30, 40, 50 years, who've had time to move into and raise children in the country and have stronger ties. It's hard to have a higher workforce rate when you're new immigrants, but that doesn't mean you don't gradually get there.
I also have a problem with his idea of his definition of assimilating into society, because his definition is sort of becoming part of the Borg collective, just become a cookie cutter of what I am. And that's not assimilating into society. Assimilating into society is being able to get by, it's making an impact, it's
participating.
It's participating, it's going to school, it's having a job, it's raising your children in the community, being a member of your local church, volunteering at your local op shop. There's a lot of things that people do to assimilate and participate in society. They take their kids to sport on Saturday morning, you know, they coach the local team, they do all sorts of things, and that's assimilating into society. That's being a part of Australian society and making Australian society a better place. That doesn't mean we all have to be what he is. In fact, I think we're a lot better off if we're not all what he is.
And he's trying to come back and say that we were a Judeo-Christian country, which is a right-wing bullshit thing. For most history, Jews and Christians have not been allies on things. The Judeo-Christian is not a... It's a bullshit construct to try and say, look, we've got some kind of historical link with them, yes. The people we've been fighting with for, I mean, they but might have also well said in the time of the Reformation, you know, we're a Catholic Protestant society. No, you guys, that's, anyway.
There's also that 60,000 years that we weren't a Judeo-Christian society.
Yeah, I'm fairly sure we didn't get, there wasn't a vote on, hey, which religion should we pick?
When the first fleet came over and basically started wiping out the Aboriginal population.
Weirdly, I would have thought that a lot of the things that we've been finding out about what white people did, and particularly the Downer family, but anyway, horrific murders of Aboriginal people, including children being bashed against trees.
Oh, God.
Horrific stuff that we've been hearing about that was happening during the frontier wars. But Fraser's out there declaring that, in Australia, most terrorism and the first terrorist acts were Muslims in 1915, and all terrorism is committed by Muslims, he says.
Yes.
Not all Muslims are terrorists, he concedes, but all terrorists are Muslims.
Again, this is one of those things that is a construct of Western media, because it is the idea that the white guy that goes in and shoots someone is not a terrorist, he's a lone wolf, he's a disturbed person, but the Muslim person or the brown-skinned person who goes in and does something is a terrorist.
Yeah. Pretty much, there is a great deal of horrific violence against people being committed for political aims around the world.
There was...
And it is not predominantly being done by Muslims, let alone 100% by Muslims. And the only way you can believe that it is 100% by Muslims is if you simply have a filter that goes, there is a horrific violent act that's just happened. Was it by a Muslim? Then it's terrorism. Was it not by a Muslim? Not terrorism. Look, it's all by Muslims.
It's horrible.
But it's illogical bullshit that works in the echo chamber that Fraser Anning lives in, but now is being presented to the whole country. And like with the Blair Cottrell thing, like with the Andrew Bolt thing, well, let's talk about those, but the point I'll be getting to is these are things we have to draw a line now, because this is all... they're trying it on to see what they can get away with, and if they get away with it, then the line gets moved further.
Absolutely. And they push a little bit further the next time, and they push a little bit further the next time. And if they take a step too far, they come back. They put in a belated apology to say that, oh, okay, well, maybe that wasn't well thought out, having someone on our show.
Okay, so the Blair Cottrell thing. So Blair Cottrell, an actual Nazi who wants pictures of Hitler in classrooms, a person who boasts about using actual terror. He boasts about using violence to intimidate women. Like, there you are, Fraser Anning. There's a fucking terrorist.
But he's white.
He uses terror to get an end out of people. That's terrorism.
No, he's white. It doesn't count.
Exactly. So Blair Cottrell's also a guy who people remember being the person that Channel 7 went to talk to when his group of far-right racists were going to basically go around patrolling the streets to assault African people. Oh, and the... I think this also happened when we were away. I think we missed this one. As the Victorian opposition and the federal Liberals are trying to beat up that Melbourne is a terrifying place because of an African gang crisis, a total invention. The bit where they were asking Christopher Pine at a doorstop if he was afraid to go to a restaurant in Melbourne, and Christopher Pine says, "And look, I could go find the audio, but I'm sure everybody who's listening to this has heard it." And he's like, "No, should I be?" And then they're like, "Well, because the Prime Minister said..." And he's like, oh, because of the gang thing.
Could you ask me that again?
Yes, he's like, oh, yeah. So basically... Gonna go again?
Crap, I forgot the party line.
Oh, that's right. This thing that I clearly don't believe, but if you say it to me again, I can definitely pretend that I believe that this is actually a thing. But the result of which was Sudanese people being beaten up, a 14-year-old in hospital for being assaulted by people incensed by...
A 14-year-old school kid walking home from school.
Yeah. So all this stuff has consequences. And Sky News knew perfectly well what they were doing, having Blair Cottrell on there to talk about immigration and how we need to stop it. But they gave it a go.
Oh, they definitely did.
And now they've recanted it since, and they're like, oh, no, we definitely shouldn't have done that. But that's only after the reaction.
And it also took them a while. It wasn't that there was a bit of a bad reaction, and the next day they went, ha, you all were right. What were we thinking? They waited a good long time.
Well, and people were putting pressure on advertisers.
Yes.
Which I think is one of the big things that people have to do. There's an organisation called Sleeping Giants, and there's an Australian version called Sleeping Giants Oz, who you can find on Twitter, who let you know what the advertisers are, who are advertising on shows that do this stuff. And so you have the details to communicate with those advertisers and say, this is what your brand is being associated with. Are you sure you want to continue? And
Absolutely. Brands
are reasonably risk-averse and will often pull out.
Yep. And I think that's one of the biggest things we can do right now. It's we can sit here and we can say capitalism sucks and this profit-driven world is awful. But at the same point, this is one of the chances that we get to manipulate that system and to use that system. And using that system by going to sponsors and going to advertisers and saying, I'm not going to buy your product anymore. I'm really disappointed in this thing you did. I'm really frustrated by you, is hugely powerful.
Also, that's how these organizations exist. Like, Channel 7 operates from advertising. Mm. The money that funds Channel 7 comes from us. Whenever we go to the supermarket and buy something that advertises on Channel 7, that product, that money goes towards Channel 7 to fund this sort of crap. If you don't take action against the advertisers, you're actually also funding the terrible things that are happening. Like, the capitalism is using you to promote this stuff, unless you turn around and say, no, 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 now I know which stuff is promoting it. And so you're basically saying to the advertisers, I'm not going to be supporting you while you're supporting that.
Absolutely. And I think it's an important statement to make. And I think it is a very effective statement to make.
And that said, Qantas is still putting Sky News on in its lounges, even after the bit where Qantas was getting a bit of pressure because of Lanehelm smearing Senator Sarah Hanson-Young.
Which he was censored for.
But the Senate, Senate condemned
him. Well, the Senate condemned him, but even...
Censured. He hasn't been censored.
No, not censored. Censured.
So that happened, and then the Blair Cottrell thing. You would think that we're getting to the point where Qantas should be pulling that off their lounges, but Qantas is apparently, even though they claim to be, you know, big supporters of diversity and so forth, they're still showing Sky News. The Victorian government decided that they were going to stop showing Sky News in train stations, however, and Sky News chucked an absolute nana about it.
Absolutely.
This is fascism, they were saying. This is fascism.
We did a fascist thing, and you not showing us is fascist.
Yeah, and refusing to broadcast a fascist on a TV network is fascism. That's pretty much the definition of fascism.
I'm also fairly sure that that's how the market works and the free market works. You do something,
but it's a government taking off something because of a political thing.
But they're choosing to put on something else.
I would like to know why the government isn't at public facilities broadcasting ABC rather than bloody Sky. I would have thought that the ABC, there being the public broadcast, would be the appropriate...
I'm actually trying to think of any train stations that have TVs that play TV stations.
Well, apparently there are stations that broadcast... I haven't ever seen it, but according to the Mark Knight cartoon, it's in the City Loop, but I don't think that it is. I've never seen it.
Or maybe I'm just in such a rush when I'm trying to get home that I have my head down and I'm looking at the escalator in front of me and not looking up to see a screen.
Well, it looks like...
Oh, I do know, actually. If you're in the City Loop, for example, if you're at Melbourne Central, it's advertising, like, it's on the walls.
Yeah, because it's not actually...
It's in, like, the train loop, like, where the billboards are.
It's put up, like, by an advertising billboard.
Yeah,
company. It's not actually... No, nobody's paying Sky for it. It's being inflicted on people. It's basically advertising. Basically, the Victorian government has gone, we're not going to advertise, have, you know, animated Sky News advertisements at our stations. Now, Sky News tried to, like, because of course they did, tear into anybody associated with this decision. So they had, and they were tearing into Jacinta Allen, the transport minister in Victoria, who'd made the decision to tell the Met to take it off. And she had assumed, because they were broadcasting Sky, and didn't realise there are multiple versions of Sky, because I wouldn't have realised that. I mean, the point is, it's not our problem. Like, if Sky is broadcasting that on one of our channels, it may have snuck it out on something else. But she said that she'd received complaints, and they said, but it wasn't on that. It wasn't being broadcast at the station. And I think she just assumed that it was. Was like, yeah, I'm sure it was. And it turns out that it wasn't, that Sky has a different feed for the stations anyway. So it looks like the Blair Cottrell thing, nobody can say that it was on, because unless... Yeah. I mean, it's not like people at the stations are really watching Sky News anyway.
No, and I can say that all I've seen are sort of news highlights. It's sort of like the news highlight reel, and then there's the train approach as it goes off.
So Sky News is like, here is this... Or in fact, all the Murdoch papers are like, oh, look at this train wreck interview where she thought that it was on there and it turns out she was wrong. I'm like, great. But the point is, it's still there to advertise Sky News, and I can see why it's appropriate for a government to say, you know what, we're not going to have Sky have advertisements at public railway stations for a channel that promotes fascists.
Yeah, that seems fair. But then there was that really...
That's what censorship is, though. The government not broadcasting a thing that you have that people can still go and watch on their tablets or pay you money for if they want to. Like, that's censorship.
But then there was that totally relevant and not at all racist political cartoon about it as well.
So Mark Knight, who, look, Mark Knight is the cartoonist at the Herald Sun, and he gets promoted by the ABC on Insiders. They have you on their talking pictures, and he comes across as sort of a nice sort of reasonable bloke, and he tweets things having a go at racist things that are posted out there on the internet. But I have a problem with Mark Knight's cartoons to begin with because they are always utterly witless. I have never seen a Mark Knight cartoon that comes even close to raising a riot chuckle, whether or not he's going after a target that I have no sympathy for or not. Like, they're all witless. Mm. They're all really obvious, but he's not confident that the Herald Sun audience will get it.
It's the one with the pig.
So he has a little pig in the corner making a comment to try and explain the joke. Or it's... Okay, I suppose he's drawing... He's okay, except in this particular one, which is staggeringly racist. His drawing's okay. He can sort of make a person look like who they're supposed to be.
It's a caricature.
Yeah, I mean, it's not... The drawing... But... The jokes and the
commentary, the social commentary is not...
Well, it's usually following the Herald Sun editorial line, so it's often like punching down,
yeah,
which is obnoxious. But even when it isn't, he had one... I mean, there's a golfer who's just died of cancer, sadly, and he's sort of done a cartoon about how sad it is. And it's just this witless thing of a golfer, how heroic he is, and I can't just... You show me a Mark Knight cartoon, and look, if anybody listening to this has any Mark Knight cartoons which they think were funny or amusing or witty in some way, please tweet at Well May We Say, because we'd love to see it, because I have never, and Mark Knight has voluminous output, and not only is every cartoon, every day he's got a cartoon in the Herald Sun, but he's also all the football stuff, all those big wraparound things, they're all Mark Knight. If anybody can find a witty, amusing Mark Knight cartoon, please tweet at Well May We Say, because I have never seen one. They are always witless. But he compounded it this week with one that was also staggeringly racist. So
staggeringly racist.
The cartoon is a picture of Jacinta Allen at a City Loop station with a remote in her hand pointing at the
wall basically. Or something,
with a remote going, and it says click. And it says, Minister Jacinta Allen takes decisive action to keep the Victorian public safe and bans Sky News on city stations.
But it's the background where it really, really reaches its heights.
So it's a bunch of dark-skinned people. He doesn't bother drawing faces for dark-skinned people.
No, he just colours everything in black, all of their skin.
They've all got baseball caps on backwards that look like they're wearing saucepans. They're picking up rubbish bins and throwing them at each other and fighting with each other. One of them's got a couple of them got hoodies. Instead of the caps, and they're just fighting, kicking, throwing stuff around the place.
Oh my God, is this one of the gangs we're supposed to be afraid of?
The caricature is racist, the way that he's drawn dark-skinned people without even facial features. They're just a hideous violet mass in the background. And obviously, the undercurrent of the cartoon, which is suggesting that the Victoria is full of dark-skinned violence, which mm-hmm. it isn't, it is a lie. So he's promoting a racist lie with a racist caricature.
Yes.
And he's been torn into on Twitter, and he is aware of it.
And isn't he saying things like he's not racist because he says not racist things? He defends people against racism.
So what he tweeted a day or two later, much blowback this week on a cartoon I drew that touched on African-Australian youth running amok. Standard Twitter outpouring of abuse that I was, quote, racist, ensued. But those who know my work know that I will call out all bad behaviour whenever I see it, whatever the colour. But following all the shrill calls that I was racist, I saw an inspirational Sudanese youth at the MCG today fly high. Alir Alir, Sudanese refugee, flew high and dominated for the Sydney Swans, and there was never a better ambassador for his countrymen. Well, his countrymen are Australians, but... Sorry, I saw a footballer from a racial group, and I liked his footballing, so therefore when I demonised everybody else in his community, it was fine. I can't be racist, I like one of them.
Yeah, I can't be racist, I admire him for the football he plays.
Mm. Yeah, no. And sorry, Mark, you're not calling out bad behaviour when you pretend that...
When you're propagating a lie.
I'm sure that there are Sudanese youths who commit violent acts. I'm sure there are, because there are youths of every group that commit violent acts. Yes. And I'm sure that people in communities that are already discriminated against in the way that is encouraged by this racist campaign are more likely to do that. But... The fact of the matter is, the vast majority of violence, and the police were just raiding a bunch of people down south, I think it was Pakenham Way the other day, actual youth gangs, who were all white.
Yep.
The vast majority of violence, let alone just youth gang violence, is committed by white people. And Mark, your cartoon isn't telling a truth. It is pretending that the violence out there is mainly by Africans.
It is, and it's demonizing an already disadvantaged group.
Well, it's demonizing them, and inaccurately.
Yeah.
Falsely. Like, it's not even like... It would be a dodgy thing to do, even if a large proportion of crime was being committed by African people.
But it's not.
No. So it's false, but it still would be a bad idea to be lunging into people on their race. Like, it would not be a constructive thing to do.
No.
But in this case, it's also staggeringly inaccurate. So, Mark Knight, you are an embarrassment. And people were asking, had he fallen off a balcony recently, referring to Bill Leake, who used to draw reasonably progressive cartoons and then turned into a staggering racist before he died. I think it was David Lane. Who was it this week who was calling out that Gillian Triggs should still be hounded from any events because she murdered Bill Leake?
What?
Well, because their line is that the Human Rights Commission, by daring to entertain a complaint against that staggeringly racist Bill Leake cartoon, where he suggested that Aboriginal people were so subhuman that they didn't know their own children's names.
Oh, God, that was horrible.
And the Australian never backed down from it. They kept republishing that cartoon. They refused to see how it was harmful and racist.
Yeah.
And Bill Leake and his dickhead supporters, beyond his death, have been arguing that he was bullied for a cartoon that was perfectly... It was fair comment to argue, to promote in an Australian newspaper, a national newspaper, the idea that Aboriginal people were less than human.
Yes.
Like, how dare he be hounded from public life for that? But he
wasn't.
What
was he thinking? What was he thinking?
So, but his switch seemed to coincide with when he fell on his head. So the question is, has Mark Knight been dropped on his head? But I don't think Mark Knight has... I don't think it's a sudden thing. I think Mark Knight has been pandering to right-wing reactionary assholes for a long time in her son. And I think if we looked back through his catalogue, I suspect this isn't the first time he's come out with some nasty racial stereotypes either. But this one was particularly egregious in the sort of stuff that you would... It was almost as bad. It's like, tragic that I have to say it's not actually the worst thing that we've seen this week, though.
Well, not the worst thing that we've seen since... Well, oh, not the... Yes, that's correct.
It's not the worst cartoon. This was in the West Australian this week. It is a cartoon by some asshole called Alston. Apparently signed Alston prints are available.
Framed or unframed?
There you are. So I give you the number, but...
We don't want to encourage that sort of behaviour.
I don't think anybody listening to this would do it, but I think that the recording might explode. This one is a racist attack on Muslims in general. It's captioned...
But it also seems to be against Chinese people with the Beijing Noodle House Stadium... A few of the other comments, like...
It's just generally racist against all
basically
groups.
Basically anyone who's ever... Yeah.
Oh, and it has a sledge at anybody opposing Australia Day being held on Invasion Day. But, so this was printed on August 11th to 12th, 1818. No, sorry, 2018.
I figure it probably wasn't printed 1818.
Sorry, I thought it was 1818. You'll see in the third panel where it goes horribly, it goes off the deep end. I mean, it's bad, but Origins of the Species, Perth 2040. State Premier Omar bin Hussein, everybody afraid he's a Muslim, anyway, addresses the footy crowd at the Beijing Noodle House Stadium. Today's match will be fought to the death. It's funny because, like, Muslims are really violent, get it?
Yeah, get it.
Food station at the stadium.
Actually, this part sounds great.
Pies, noodles, curries, biltong.
Like, I would love to get decent food at a stadium.
Yeah, but there's a person with lines, with eyes that are a horizontal line.
Ah, and there's a person in a kneecap.
Yeah, no, you know, where you can only see her eyes. Oh, it's just, it's a nightmare. And then, I don't know how to describe this, there's a person buried up to their neck with a comedy cartoon bump on their head. And a bunch of stereotypical Middle Eastern looking people holding stones and somebody selling stones to them. Get your stones here. Bag of gravel, $3. And the caption at the top, halftime entertainment, stoning.
Because
Muslim people in Australia want to stone people.
Well, they want to put in Sharia law where we stone people, right? Right? That's what they want to do, right?
No, I'm pretty sure they don't. Survivors and fans, says Omar bin Hussein. Survivors and fans have reminded that Invasion Day will be celebrated in Frio tomorrow. There will be no fireworks.
There's an asterisk, and the asterisk on the side says Invasion Day in August.
I'm not even sure what that means.
It's.
But anyway, the stoning.
Yeah.
If we have Muslims here, we'll have stonings.
But it's a whole thing. It's a sledge at that. It's a sledge at anyone who gets upset about Invasion Day and...
But it's a stereotype invasion,
but like it's
Muslims
all of these
are murderous psychopaths.
But, it's so many people. Sledges at once. It's not just the one.
And earlier in the week, we thought that the Andrew Bolt thing
Yeah, when we were away, we were keeping up with the Australian news and we were keeping up what was going on. And we thought that, you know, Andrew Bolt had taken the cake.
So his article, which went around all the News Corp tabloids, but in the Daily Telegraph, was called The Foreign Invasion. And the subheading, Australia is being swamped. Swamped, you know, as in Pauline Hanson's woman, swamped by non-English speaking immigrants who refuse to assimilate and accept our values. In the face of this influx, we're losing our identity. And the image on the Daily Telegraph version is a bunch of ethnic stereotypes sitting around an Australia that is a giant pie, looking menacing and preparing to carve us up for themselves.
Oh.
And Bolt's rant is basically, here are various places where there's, you know, like a little India or a little China or a little Jewish enclave, which reminded a lot of Jewish people who have been supportive of people like Bolt that, hang on, he can come after us as well.
Yep. That, you know, the supposed acceptance is perhaps not as accepting as one would think.
I seriously got stuck into Jewish communities. Robert Mann had a good takedown of it. One of the things was he reckons that in Box Hill, like a couple of minutes from where we are now, an astonishing 2/3 of residents were born in China or have Chinese ancestry. And he did that by, he took the 2016 census, he added 30, which in which the people of Chinese ancestry was 35.4%, and he added it to those born in China, 27.6%. But those are different questions.
Yeah.
It seems very likely that, you know, many of the 27.6% of people born in China would also have Chinese ancestry and would be included within the 35.4%.
Probably like 99.9% of them. There's always going to be the exception. There's going to be your Larissa Waters, born in Canada but not of Canadian parents.
It's more likely that the number is more like the 35% of the people who actually say they have Chinese ancestry rather than adding the people born in China to that.
Yeah.
Mann points out, well, okay, using that calculation method that Andrew Bolt uses, then 111.8% of people in Hurstbridge are Anglo-Australian.
Yes.
Bolt is not very good at maths.
But the thing is, anywhere you go, pretty much in any country in the world, people sort of gravitate towards each other. People gravitate towards people of like minds. You think people gravitate to people who have the same culture, have the same background, have the same belief systems. You have Greek towns and little Indias and
rich people. Rich white people tend to move to one.
You have the leafy. You have the leafy North Shore in Sydney.
Why won't rich white people assimilate with the rest of us?
Oh God, right? But like almost anywhere you go, you have communities of people, in part because a lot of times these communities of people feel discriminated against.
Maybe it's not so much that they are forming communities and huddling away from white people. Maybe it's
excluded.
White people are being racist and refusing to live in areas that have immigrant groups in them. Maybe the ghettoisation is actually white people.
I remember living in Sheffield in England in 97, 98 and being told not to move into a certain neighborhood because if I moved in that certain neighborhood, it was a very Indian neighborhood and everything that we owned would start smelling like curry.
Nice.
Because there was an apartment building, we were looking at a flat and like, no, everyone in there is Indian.
Oh, I already know that if you're an Indian couple looking to rent a house, there is staggering discrimination against you because the landlords think that the house will smell like Indian spices and they don't want that. So they don't let there are a whole lot of groups who find it really hard finding accommodation. And then we're like, well, they're going and forming communities where they all want to live with each other. But when they go to try and live in areas that are not those areas, then the white people go, no, you're not going to live in our houses.
You're not good enough to live in our houses.
But you'd better not go and live all near each other either. Yeah. Like, this is bullshit. Also, Andrew Bolt assumes that anybody who has a different ethnic background to him has not assimilated. So he's like, 41% of the residents of North Caulfield are Jews. And yeah, 41% of North Caulfield residents cite Judaism as their religion, but 59% of them were born in Australia, 69% speak only English at home, only 5% think of their ancestry as Jewish. So like, he's like, oh, well, Australia's being colonized by unassimilated people in ghettos, and here is a suburb where 40% are Jewish, but almost 70% of them speak English exclusively at home.
Yes.
Like, what a ghetto.
Yeah.
Just insane.
It's been like sort of like we went away for 3 weeks and it's just been sort of like the racist showdown. It's been, how could Australia be more racist this week?
Why are we asking that question? Because it's going to, somebody, like Fraser Annie is out there going,
it's going to lead to Fraser Annie sitting there going, here, hold my beer. Like,
oh, yeah, no, who is turning to Fraser Annie right now going, hold my beer?
Because that's a terrifying thought.
Meanwhile, you got a lot of condemnation of phrase running by mainstream politicians condemning his reference, because it's fairly easy to at least, because even Pauline Hanson is condemning him on the basis that, like, the Final Solution thing is one remark too far.
Yes,
even if the content
even
is
for
that.
Pauline Hanson, a lot of her condemning him does have to deal with the fact that he used to be a part of her party, got into Senate by being a part of her party, and then immediately left.
And I don't think it's the kind of product differentiation she actually wants to do, given who she panders to. It's not like anybody who's not a staggering racist is going to vote
exactly
for Pauline Hanson anyway.
And because her speeches were all about stopping Muslim immigration and that there's too many Muslims in this country.
Yeah.
So she said the exact same things, but
she left out the Holocaust reference.
Yeah, she left out the Holocaust reference, but she also has to castigate Fraser Anning.
Yes.
If it wasn't him who made that comment, I wonder if she would have made such a statement against him.
But those who are happily condemning Fraser for his racism are the same people who still support what we're doing to children on Nauru, for example. And the government's still saying there aren't any children in detention whilst fighting to stop them being brought to Australia for medical care. And
oh, you mean the children that we're torturing?
So late in July, a young girl was brought to Australia from Nauru, where she was sent in 2013. So she's been there for 5 years.
Holy crap.
Not a huge amount is known about her because of the court orders. So we don't know her name, her age, other than that she's adolescent. We don't know where she fled from, but she has been granted refugee status. Her health started to deteriorate sharply at the start of July. On July 9, she cut her thighs with a razor. The next day, she cut her arms and legs, was taken to the emergency room at Nauru Hospital. This should really have a trigger warning, actually. She started refusing food and water. She hadn't eaten or drunk anything for 6 days, blood pressure's high. Anyway, she's been diagnosed with a major depressive disorder and with resignation syndrome. But resignation syndrome is a thing that we should contemplate for a second. It's, and BuzzFeed had a report on this, it is a rare condition that was known for sending hundreds of refugee children in Sweden into a seemingly unconscious state. Basically, it's a serious state of withdrawal, a very serious state of withdrawal that, quote, traumatized children go through when they are overwhelmed by stress. The quote for BuzzFeed was from a professor of psychiatry at Melbourne University. It's usually been found in situations where there's no sense of safety around them and they're traumatized. It's a form of escape or dissociation. They go into a state where they look semi-conscious. They might start looking depressed, then they become mute, they stop talking, they withdraw, they don't interact with anyone, they end up taking to their beds and becoming unconscious. In the extreme, they can die. Quote
That's
is,
absolutely
it's
terrifying.
Like going into hibernation. The world is too hard. And there are other children who are being sent with the same diagnosis. We are treating children with a level of cruelty necessary for them to shut down and go into hibernation.
How do you ever come back from that? Like,
well, the children won't. I don't know how we as a country come back.
It's weird. Oh, no, either. It's like the kids who, the generation of people who survived World War II in Belgium, or who survived concentration camps, and the trauma they suffered. If you look at their children and their children, they still have genetic markers that indicate the trauma they suffered, because it actually changed their genetic makeup. And that's what we're doing to these people. That's what we are doing to people. We are actually torturing people. We are traumatizing
children.
People. Yeah. Well, adults as well, but we are doing it
and
to children.
And it's a form of collective punishment. The logic behind it is if we brutalize these children hard enough, nobody will dare get on a boat.
No.
So these children are here. Like, we don't need to deter them from anything. They are children, and she's a refugee. It's not like, you know, a punishment because she's done something wrong. She's a refugee. She's recognized as a refugee. She's here. We're punishing someone to send a message to someone else. We are breaking children as a form of warning.
Yeah.
Like, why don't we extend that principle more generally? We'll just pick up some scapegoats and just start breaking them and destroying
it's
them
horrifying.
To send a message to other people. Just because, you know. It's like, you know, you go to prison on the first day and you punch the biggest guy there, you know. It's a warning to everybody else. It's important to go in and break and harm people in order to send a message. Like, what kind of country does that? I mean, other than America and a lot of the West now. And,
yeah.
Okay, humanity is fine.
And, you know, the European Union saying that they're seriously considering following the Australian method of offshore processing and putting refugees, basically. Anyway, yeah. The Australian solution is one that they were considering.
Anyway, Canada has basements. I think we should definitely look into basements here. Like, they're nice and cool. They are nice insulated. They're, like,
yeah.
For a country that's getting warmer. And oh, God, did you see the Guardian article about heat stress around the world and how we're getting closer to 50?
Nope.
And how much of the world is going to become fundamentally uninhabitable, and also the giant disparity between basically the people who can cool themselves in the heat and the people who can't, and the poorer areas where you're less likely to have access to things like air conditioning are also the ones that are, you know, urban jungles that don't have trees to cool them down. And we're getting closer and closer to that meanwhile.
And now the more, and it's interesting because I remember listening to, was it a 99% Invisible about the invention of air conditioning, but also the design of buildings that was, that's almost an art that's lost of designing buildings pre-air conditioning.
Oh yeah, because we've basically gone, we've got this technology, now we don't have to worry about keeping them cool.
And so like, that's why they always had central courtyards, so everyone had windows, that's why they had all of these things that would increase airflow, yeah.
And there would be more, and the areas that are going to be wealthy that have the air conditioning, which of course, you know, what does air conditioning do? It makes outside hotter because it's blast. Like air conditioning
Also puts a huge strain on the energy network and grid,
which creates its own greenhouse gases and creates makes the problem worse. But also, what air conditioning does? Air conditioning doesn't like make cool. What it does is transfer heat. Yes. It takes it from inside and blows it outside, making outside hotter. So that's great if you're inside. It's not good if you're a homeless person. Anyway, my point is, basements are good. We should build more basements.
We should. And when someday, when we magically have enough money to build a house, we'll build a basement.
They're probably not even... oh, dear. This has gone from trying to look at the positive to just utterly delusional.
Anyway,
all right. Well, let's talk about the climate stuff on the NEG next week. Not this week. Obviously, Frydenberg is trying to sell it this week. The giant question of being, he's trying to sell this line that they've got, we're all going to save, get $550 off our power bills each year, like the $550 we're supposed to get off our power bills from the carbon price being repealed, which nobody ever did. And everybody's like, where is your modeling for that? And they've released a spreadsheet, but with nothing else. And everyone other than them says, no, it's more likely to push up prices. And any reductions that are foreseen in the period that the energy would be in place are going to happen regardless of the NEG. Anyway, that's the thing we can talk about next week. In the meantime,
good to be back in the saddle.
I kind of was thoroughly depressed everybody by. But look, what else are we going to... It's not like we're going to ignore that shit that was happening. Oh, we can end on some good news. For Victorians, at least. The Andrews government...
Potential good news.
The Andrews government has announced their legislation to give renters more rights.
Yes, call your MP... Write to your MP, email them, let them know that you want them to support this and you want to see it passed before they go into caretaker mode.
If you go to makerentingfair.org, you can put in your address and there's a way of sending it to all of your upper house and lower house state members, which is very important to do because it needs to get on before the election because the Libs will not do it.
No.
And I don't think this legislation goes quite far enough, but it is certainly a rebalancing in favour of tenants, which we will not see under the Libs. And if they make any of these changes, they will be much more in favour of landlords. And fundamentally, if landlords are pissed off, that means we're moving in the right direction.
And landlords are pissed off.
Yeah. So that is good news. Please go to the Make Renting Fair site to support that if you can. Otherwise, thank you, Denise, for coming back on the podcast.
Anytime.
Thank you, Monty the cat, for yowling in the other room for about the last half of it, because I will not be able to edit that out of it. Thanks, Monty. You're a jerk.
Thanks, Denise, for moving Monty down from Sydney with her a year and a half ago.
Thank you, me, for editing. Thank you, Alex Lum, for the artwork. Thank you, Robin Gray, for the music. Thank you, Patreon subscribers, for continuing to support the podcast. We know that it has been a bit of a gap because of, us being overseas, but also there were some serious throat issues just beforehand, which buggered up recording a bit. We are back in the saddle now. We are expecting that there should be weekly recordings now. And thank you for sticking with us. Your support is what keeps the podcast going. So thank you very much. And we will see you all next week. Good night.
Have a good night.